Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Hey, thanks for joining us this week. It's hot. It's still hot in Chicago, and I am going to whine about it. I don't do the hot. I don't like Vegas, even if it's a dry heat. I just don't like the hot.
I like the hot.
All right. When you get a chance, do us a favor. Check us out at consumerguide.com. Check out our 2025 Best Buy picks, our all-new reviews. I just reviewed a car that I think is almost perfect, and that is the Toyota Crown Signia. I love that car. I love it so much. My review of that vehicle is up right now. Plus, there's all sorts of fun stuff on the blog. That voice, that giggle, was Jill Simonillo, managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American car juror, and freelance person.
And freelance person who likes heat.
Yeah.
I'm a party of one, I think. My husband was like, "Is it still hot outside?" And I'm like, "Well, I think it's comfortable." And he was like, "Comfortable for you or comfortable for me?" And I was like, "Fair, comfortable for me."
I had a colleague, a coworker, when I worked for a media in market research for a medical association, and he was from Jamaica.
Mm.
He loved this crap.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love this crap too.
He thrived in this crap.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I'll go and stay with my mom, and she keeps her house at 80 degrees all year long because that's as high as her heat will go. I bring layers.
60 is.
I bring layers, but I have no problems. And my sisters are always like dying. They are like puddles, and I'm just like, it's not that. And my husband goes, and he just falls asleep because he's like, I can't stay awake in this heat.
No, 80's crazy talk. 72, I can live with in the summer.
Oh, like if she's feeling risky, I can get her to go down to like 78.
When Consumer Guide still was part of the Publications International team, and we had a building, a home office in Lincolnwood, Morton Grove, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
My office was like the last office in a row, and I don't know what the deal was, but it was always freezing cold in there. I was so happy.
And you were wearing shorts.
Oh, yeah. All year, all winter. Yeah.
All year.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it when I got outside. I'm like, oh, yeah, it was cold in there. Like, mm-hmm. You could feel the heat.
Mm-hmm.
We have interesting news. Last month, by far, our best month ever.
Oh, yay.
So thank you, new listeners.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome.
Spread the word. Leave us a review. We appreciate you joining us.
Yes.
For these car chats of some value, we hope.
Plus you're funny.
Yes, that's right.
And my mom says hello, and she says, "Don't laugh too hard today."
All right. I was going to do something more serious, but now I'm going to do something less serious.
Okay, I like less serious.
But it's kind of serious if you dig into it. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Chrysler Cordoba.
Okay.
This is a big deal for a bunch of reasons. One, for cultural reasons, these commercials featured Ricardo Montalban, who would become Khan. But at the time was doing Fantasy Island.
Right.
But the real big deal here was that this was Chrysler's commercials for this car were literally an apology for making a small car. And if you've seen a Cordoba, you know it wasn't that small. But Chrysler only built big cars up until that point, and they had to go with the flow. People wanted smaller cars. They wanted more affordable cars, and inflation was terrible at the time. Prices were going high, and fuel economy was really important. So the Cordoba came out.
Okay.
And what's so weird about it culturally is that it was a two-door. And it just sort of nailed to the ground the foundation for the personal luxury car that included the Grand Prix, the Monte Carlo, the Cutlass Supreme, all these cars, and then later the Thunderbird. But the Cordoba was not the best-selling of these, but it was probably the most profitable.
Okay.
Because they had this luxury thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I may let you look at this, but I have in my hand, and our YouTube followers can see it. This is the keychain they gave away with the first year of the Cordoba.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So, I mean, okay.
In the commercial.
It looks like a gold coin.
Yeah. In the commercial, Ricardo Montalban holds one of these.
Oh.
Since no one knows different, this is the one that Ricardo Montalban held.
Okay.
So, yeah,
it's very bougie.
He signed it on the back.
Yeah, I see that. I see that.
You don't see that. You're just humoring me.
I have new contacts right now, so I see everything.
But yeah, happy anniversary, happy birthday, Chrysler Cordoba.
Okay.
And now Chrysler doesn't sell a car.
No, not at the moment.
No.
We will be having Chris Fuell on in...
shortly.
You know, a couple weeks.
Who is CEO of the Chrysler brand.
Yeah.
And the Alfa Romeo brand.
Yeah, and I've been listening to her a lot on Automotive News on their podcast with your friend Jamie Butters.
My good friend.
Very good friend Jamie Butters. If he ever listens to this, he's going to be like, what the hell?
That guy's a stalker.
Yeah, you are a bit of a stalker. But funny. You're funny.
A funny stalker.
A funny stalker in a good way. I've been listening to her. And it sounds like Chrysler has things coming.
They've got stuff coming. They've got a midsize crossover, an electric vehicle, and a third thing I thought. I can't remember. But some electrification, but a nice crossover would be nice.
Yeah,
The Chrysler brand is perfect for that.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so here's the thing that you and I have gone back and forth on.
Okay.
And I hesitate to say I was wrong. But things have changed.
Okay, so not wrong.
Not wrong, but the situation may be changing.
Okay.
And that's that fuel cell vehicles could possibly
yes.
make it in the marketplace because, and this is interesting, and I heard about this in one of the podcasts I listened to, and then I couldn't find more information about it. So it's coming out in dribs and drabs. There may be enormous pockets of hydrogen in the ground. If there is, that solves half the problem of hydrogen because it is extremely expensive to extract and energy intensive to extract from the atmosphere. But if you just have free bulk hydrogen, half your problem is gone. The other half is still distribution.
Right.
And assuming that you can get it from the ground easily, which you probably can, it's a gas. If you can get it out of the ground easily, it should be affordable. We'll see. But this changes everything. Not only does it make fuel cell something that could happen possibly, but the other thing it does is it makes possible, if it's cheap enough, hydrogen-powered internal combustion engines, which would be very, very clean. And manufacturers have been playing with this for decades.
Yep.
They don't produce much power, but that's a thing that we can probably get past. If the fuel is cheap enough, you can just make bigger engines.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes. But it's an interesting change in the story.
Yeah, and if anybody hasn't been following us for a while or following me, I actually think that fuel cells are a big, a good solution to, or part of the solution for, you know, better fuel efficiency. And, especially for semis, I think that makes a lot of sense over the long haul. Electric semis, like, that's going to be hard to charge. It's going to take them forever. But if you could just fuel with hydrogen... You know, and it burns water.
And you can build, you still have to build a hydrogen distribution channel along the highway.
Yep.
So let's see where that goes. But you're right about electric over-the-road trucks and that they need enormous batteries and they need to charge more quickly.
Yep. And we just don't know if that's possible.
And speaking of charging more quickly, you and I have gone back and forth a couple of times in the last few weeks about how charging isn't going to get much more quick, isn't going to get much quicker. But that's beyond... I wanted to correct something about that. I was thinking about it over the weekend. Theoretically, it can still get quicker because we haven't maximized what we have. Right? Electrify America has 350 kilowatt stations.
Mm-hmm.
Most cars don't charge faster than 100 or 150 kilowatts.
Correct. Yeah.
So that's a thing right there that could make charging faster.
Yep.
And the other thing that could make charging faster, too, is that if electric vehicles become more efficient and we can use smaller batteries, well, it takes less time to charge a smaller
Correct.
Battery. Yeah. So there are these things that can improve charge times.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't think that the actual...
You don't think we're going to be China fast?
No. No, I don't think China's going to be China fast. I don't think the money's there for that.
Okay.
You know what we haven't talked about? And we could talk about this with someone maybe who knows something about China, another guest, or bring back one of our...
Bring back Patrick.
Yeah. And that's battery swapping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a process by which you have a car, you drive it into a swapping station, like an oil change place, and they take your depleted battery out and put in a new battery in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Do you remember when VinFast first was making sounds about coming over here? You would, was at least the battery, but own the car. And so the idea was that if your battery started to lose, you know, its capability, then you'd just go in and they'd lease you a new battery.
By the time that VinFast offered that, I think that consumer concern about batteries failing completely had faded.
Yeah.
It was too little, too late. Also, the lease was expensive. On top of the car, they wanted you to pay $100 a month for the battery.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get out of here.
On top of a very expensive car.
And we are learning increasingly that the battery life of a battery in an EV is very long.
Yeah.
Like end-of-life Teslas, and there are 20-year-old Teslas out there now. Well, 14-year-old Teslas. That have like 90% battery capacity still.
Yeah.
That's pretty resilient.
Yeah.
So we know that some makers, like Nissan, had some trouble with early Leafs in hot weather.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's gone.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
Yeah, so there's that. Interesting piece of news here. VW is going to take a bigger stake in Rivian. I don't know what that means.
No, I don't know either, but that is interesting. I mean, Rivian is one of those automakers I really want to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem earnest. They make very nice products. Mm-hmm. They can't, and they've developed some stuff themselves. Like, don't they make their own batteries? And I think they make their own motors.
Yeah.
Or they make some of their own motors. So they're developing this technology themselves. It's not off-the-shelf stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, more power to them. I'd love to see it work. But the problem is they're selling $80,000 vehicles, and they're not making money on $80,000 vehicles. So they got to get that stuff right.
But they're probably, do you think they're making any money off of the Amazon fleet? Or is the Amazon fleet?
That is a great question. I don't know.
Supporting, you know, their cars. And I mean, the other thing is, next year, we should start seeing prototypes of the R2 and the R3.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if they can get the cost down on those, they'll sell far more of those because they're going to be more in the price sweet spot.
Yeah.
If we look out this window for like a minute or two, we will see an Amazon truck.
Yeah, I know. There are a lot of them. And it is, to me, it's joyful to see them in the city of Chicago.
Here's the thing about that, and maybe this is part of your city joy. They're so quiet.
Yeah.
And I live half a block from an Amazon facility.
Okay.
And I don't hear the trucks.
Okay.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
And they're running like 100 or so. They added more charging stations. I haven't counted, but they've added.
Okay.
So this program, this little project seems to be going well. I guess it's an experiment at this point.
Yeah.
All right. All right. That's it. I don't know how much I care. Mitsubishi's going to start selling Mitsubishi badged Renaults in Europe. That seems like the beginning of the end to me, but I. Okay. I didn't know how excited you'd be about that story.
Not very.
All right. One of them will be the new Mitsubishi Grandis. Okay, you're still not interested.
Mm-mm.
Do you want to look at my keychain again?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I'm good.
Ricardo Montalban held it.
Yeah, he totally did and
commercial.
Signed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, you were just on a trip. You drove the 2026 Honda CR-V Trail Sport.
Yes.
This will be the fourth Honda product to get the Trail Sport badge.
Mm-hmm.
What does this mean for ma and pa car buyer?
It means that you get Trail Sport badging with a hybrid platform. This is the first time that Trail Sport has gotten a hybrid powertrain. And the interesting thing about the CR-V Trail Sport is it's just a little bit more capable. It gets a little bit more cladding in the front and the back, and does not get any skid plates, does not get a trail mode, but it looks cool. It has an exclusive color. It has that pretty orange accent. It has rugged and durable.
You mean the orange interior trim?
Well, the Trail Sport badge
okay.
is orange, and then it has like the stitching on the interior and the Trail Sport badging on the seats.
I dig the contrasting stitching.
Yeah.
On some level, I think it's a little adolescent, and on some level, I really like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like orange. But it has like the more rugged seats. It has like the seats, cloth seats are very durable, rugged. They have the all-weather floor mats in there. And I don't know. It looks really good. We did some mild off-roading.
Sure.
And the idea is this is a vehicle that you would take to a trailhead, kind of like a Subaru. You know, it's the kind of thing you would take to a trailhead, you would take camping, you would do some light trails in, nothing
too
heavy.
Do you get any ground clearance?
No, you do not.
Rock Creek, no. I just drove the Rogue Rock Creek.
Yeah, yeah.
No extra ground clearance there either. Just wheels and tires, really.
Yeah, and this has all-terrain tires. And, you know, like I said, it looks good. It gets the hybrid treatment. It's a hybrid-only powertrain, and it is it's really quiet. I really like the hybrid powertrain in Hondas. I think they do a phenomenal job next to Toyota. I would say they probably have the best hybrids in the business.
And in like so many cases, this is the premium drivetrain.
Yes.
The standard is a 1.5 turbo.
Yes.
And this is a 2-liter hybrid.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was like 204 horsepower is the combined output.
Something like, it's like 14 or 15 more than the base vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, doing a short test drive isn't really a good fuel economy gauge, but we were getting more than 30 miles per gallon.
You know what? At a press event, that's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Because you guys do things.
Yeah, we do things. We sit a lot and idle, taking pictures and videos and stuff like
that. Speaking of which, 100% off topic, I just drove the redesigned Chevrolet Equinox.
Okay.
In base LT trim with the midnight package, which makes it look a lot less base.
Mm-hmm.
But I broke 30 miles per gallon.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty nice.
That
vehicle, not available in hybrid form, but if you can get 30 mpg.
In an SUV?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Doing okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I just didn't want to forget.
No, that's okay. But overall, I had two complaints about the vehicle. And one is the seat comfort. I don't know what's going on in the CRV and the HRV lately. But
is it possible you're deformed?
It could be. It could be. Although I will say I'm in a BMW iX right now and totally comfortable seats. So, I don't know. Also, super
Forester. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, really comfortable seats.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But both me and my partner had problems after about an hour sitting in those seats. Like, both the passenger and driver's seat were just, like, they just feel really stiff and just kind of hard.
I never have seat problems unless I'm driving something with sports seats. And last week, I drove the Golf R, the Volkswagen GTI's big brother.
Yeah.
And just like the Stelvio that you and I drove from Chicago to Wisconsin, after a little while, those seats were getting to me.
Yeah.
Like a gut punch.
Well, because you've got like the side bolstering. And I mean, for me, like the really aggressive bolstering never touches my rib cage. I'm too small for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the seats were uncomfortable. The other thing that was a bit ish is the wireless charger. And I mean, very few automakers have perfected that just yet. But the problem with this was that it just didn't, like, it was really hard to find where I had to place my phone to charge it. And then once I found it, it would, like, move off of it pretty quickly. So that was just annoying.
Speaking of which, nice thing you wouldn't expect it from Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in the Equinox. They had a charging station that was like a port, a bay.
Uh-huh.
And you put your phone in there, and no matter where it slid around in there, it charged.
General Motors is the one automaker that gets wireless charging.
I'm surprised by a couple of things from GM in the last half decade.
Mm-hmm.
Good-looking cars and some relatively savvy tech. And like, that's not the old GM.
No. They do have some savvy tech. But back to the CRV.
If you gotta.
I gotta. So 2026 is getting a refresh. All new for the entire lineup. You're going to have a 9-inch infotainment screen. There's some updated graphics in the infotainment system, which gets a huge thumbs up from me. Wireless Apple CarPlay is standard. Wireless charging, I want to say, is also standard. And then you have an available 10.25-inch cluster behind the driver, which is available. And there's like upper trim availability. I want to say it was like EXL and then the upper hybrid trims.
Yeah, I spent an hour yesterday trying to find the trip odometer in a Volkswagen.
So good luck with that.
I'm a little teched out right now.
I have emailed Volkswagen about this many times and how to reset it and get the average fuel economy versus the fuel economy.
Trip.
And I'm just like, this. And Volkswagen owner here, but older Volkswagen owner here. So, but I'm just like, why does this have to be so hard?
I don't know. I wanted to talk about that, actually. We'll talk about it, I think, after the quiz, if we have time.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk about the tech and the Type R, because I've had real problems with Volkswagen connectivity and tech stuff. But this, it's better, but it ain't fixed. But anyway, in a nutshell, this thing's priced just below the Touring.
Yes.
So it's up there in the trim levels.
I want to say it's about $40,000.
Yeah, about $40,000.
But the good thing about it is it's a WYSIWYG. Everything is included, and you really don't need any options.
So that's good. That's the price. $40,000 is the price. And it seems nicely equipped. It looks good. You have just finished writing a complete review of this, mm-hmm. so we will share that.
Awesome.
All right. After the break, we're going to talk to Joe Ligo, whose name I pronounced the last time he was on the show. Joe Ligo, producer of The Last Independent Automaker. I just watched the first episode of that.
Mm-hmm.
It is so good. He killed it.
Awesome.
These guys killed it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
We Are Motor Driven is like your favorite garage conversation, just with mics. Honest car talk, wild opinions, and no gatekeeping. New episodes weekly, wherever you get your podcasts. Bring snacks and buckle up.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Jill, throw me a bone real quick.
Hey, Tom, are you on social media?
I am, Jill. Thank you for asking. I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter and X and Blue Sky.
Which is really just two things.
It is.
X Twitter.
I can't stop calling it Twitter, though.
I can't either. I'm with you. I've settled on calling it X Twitter. Because you get the X in there, and then it's Twitter, but it was Twitter, and so it's X Twitter.
Do you know who else is on X?
Mm-mm.
Our guest, Joe Ligo.
Oh, yes. Okay. I did, in fact, know that.
All right. On the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast hotline, Joe Ligo, producer of The Last Independent Automaker. Sorry. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tom. How are you this afternoon?
I am great, and I have a confession to make. I watched the first episode just last night of your fabulous documentary series, and it is flat-out fabulous. Congratulations, sir.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear that. That's really good to hear, and we're excited. All six episodes are both available now on YouTube and on the free PBS app, and depending where you live, it might be broadcasting on your local PBS station, too.
People need to watch this even if they think they know about AMC, about American Motors. Watching the first episode, I realized how little I know about the formation of this company. And the background is fantastic. The whole Nash thing, I loved all of it. Did this come out the way you wanted it to?
Yeah, I think I'm really pleased.
Good.
Most projects, it was more work than we thought it would be when we started, but I'm really proud of what our team is able to put together, and the feedback we've been getting has been great so far. So it's really been a blessing just how much people have enjoyed it.
For people who don't know, or for people who are very young, remind us, what was American Motors?
American Motors was a company that was created by the merger of two other car companies in 1954, the Nash Kelvinator Corporation and the Hudson Motor Car Company merged, and the name of the new company, instead of calling it Nash Hudson or something like that, they came up with an all-new name, American Motors Corporation. And so AMC was in business from 1954 all the way up until 1987 when it was purchased by Chrysler Corporation. And so our documentary is the history of that, what leads up to the merger, and then what happened during that time, and then what happened after the buyout.
What I love about this, and the documentary reminded me of this, is how fiercely independent AMC was, and how AMC decided not to chase larger, more profitable vehicles, but found the niche that they wanted to be in, which was smaller, more affordable vehicles, but not compact, right? It was a really interesting size, and AMC almost defined what like an affordable mid-sized car might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's, AMC at their best, they were able to find market niches that, you know, the big three hadn't found yet. And in the 50s, the episode you watched, episode one, that was smaller cars, not as small as foreign cars, bigger than a VW Beetle, but, you know, smaller than your standard Ford Chevy or Plymouth.
Yeah, it's interesting how that worked, and how at some level the public seemed to reject the idea, but on some level they came to love it. And Rambler, out of nowhere, became a huge success, correct?
Yes, and then we talk about that in episode one and in episode two, how, you know, for a while there it looked like American Motors wasn't going to make it, and then it just started to take off, and people started to come around and say, well, hey, wait a minute, we don't have to drive these giant as CEO George Romney called them, we don't have to drive these gas-guzzling dinosaurs. and, you know, that really kind of struck a chord with people by the late 50s because American cars had gotten pretty big. And, of course, what you saw was that in episode two, I don't want to spoil anything, but in episode two, you find that the big three kind of go rushing after the compact market. And you get cars like the Corvair and the Falcon and the Valiant, all because American Motors proved that there was money to be made in that niche.
And that money really meant a lot for the local folks, right? AMC really changed Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, for a while. There was Racine, and wasn't there manufacturing in Milwaukee for a while?
Yes, there was a body plant in Milwaukee and a parts plant in Milwaukee, and then the two main final assembly plants were in Kenosha, which is, you know, just down the road. They would literally truck half-finished cars, you know, across town, you know, to go from one plant to the other. So, yeah, and I mean, I forget the exact number, but somebody told me that, you know, at one point, I think American Motors employed close to 15,000 people just in the Kenosha area alone. So, you know, that makes a big difference in the lives of a lot of folks. At one point, Kenosha was the highest output car factory in the United States just because it was so big. So, yeah, it definitely made a big difference to the people who were living there, that's for sure.
All right, so I'm going to go off topic mildly, and Jill's going to giggle when I get to the topic I'm going to here. But AMC, for a while, too, was building some of the most popular police cars in the country, was it not? Especially those as found on Adam 12.
There's the giggle. Yeah. Adam 12, yes.
No, my parents are big fans of Adam 12. They watch on MeTV, you know, every night when they eat dinner. And yeah, I mean, you saw a lot of... I don't know if it was just because the L.A. police department bought a lot of Matadors and a lot of Ambassadors, but they tended to show up in a lot of TV shows as cop cars. In fact, the other night I was watching The A-Team on on TV, and one of the military police guys was driving an Ambassador, a fleet Ambassador, which was interesting because they were slightly different from, I actually own a 72 Ambassador, and the fleet specials were a little bit different from the civilian ones, and so I was like, hey, that's an Ambassador. So anytime there's an AMC on TV, you know, I have to get out my phone, take a picture, send it to my friends, be like, hey, look what I saw on TV.
I had to place a phone call to John Beale. He's the past editor-in-chief of Collectible Automobile, about seeing AMCs on Adam 12. And one of the things was they opened that show in the early years with Belvederes. Plymouth Belvederes went to Plymouth Satellites, and then they went to the AMC Ambassadors. I'm sorry, the Matadors. And if you watch the beginning sequence when the cars are being hustled around, the Belvedere's all over the road. The Satellite handles like a floppy whale. But the Matador is really nicely planted. And I talked to John Beale, and he told me that, police really liked the Matador. It was their favorite police car.
That's fascinating. I knew that Matadors were a little bit shorter wheelbase and stuff, so I'm sure that was part of it. But I didn't. You know, I had never heard that the police specifically liked them for that particular reason. I always thought it was just because AMC would give them a better deal.
They probably did.
A couple bucks.
And we don't know that they didn't ride like hell.
Fascinating.
Right?
Well, right, yeah. But it's funny. I love watching old TV shows for that reason. I'm all about looking for the cars. So I think that's something you and I both have in common. And I think that's one thing with our documentary, one thing we're really excited about was the amount of old TV commercials we were able to include.
Oh, I haven't seen those yet.
You know, so episode one has a few Rambler commercials, you know, Nash commercials from the 50s, and then later on throughout the series you'll see ads for Javelin, AMX, Pacer, you know, all the big hits.
So, I mean, I would consider you an expert on AMC, and you put this together, and I'm wondering if in the process of doing this documentary series, did you learn anything new or surprising that you didn't previously know?
Absolutely, yes. Thanks. That's a good question, Jill. So I produced this with my two co-producers, Jim Needle, who is more of the technical, you know, shooting, editing kind of guy. And then Patrick Foster, who has written a lot for Collectible Automobile.
Yep.
He's the guy who's been studying AMC, you know, since probably the night. Well, he worked for AMC as a salesman, and then after that he wrote about AMC. So this has been, you know, a 50-year love affair for him. And I learned a lot from Pat. You know, anytime I was working on stuff for the script, I was always running it past Pat. I was like, is this true? Is this right? He's like, let me check my books, you know. And so between the two of us, we checked and double-checked everything. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing I learned, there wasn't a particular factual piece of information that I hadn't known because I'd read a lot of Pat's books, and his books are pretty thorough. One thing that really surprised me was how when we interviewed close to 50 different former employees, you know, both blue collar and white collar, it was interesting that they didn't always agree on everything. You know, you might have one guy who, you know, one of the fellows would talk about, like, the Chrysler buyout, for example, in 1987, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of the blue-collar workers obviously felt that, you know, well, Chrysler lied to us. They said they'd keep the plant open. They closed the plant down, laid us all off. You know, Chrysler's the worst thing that ever happened to Kenosha. But a lot of the white-collar folks were like, well, you know, Chrysler kept me on, hired me in to work as a designer, an engineer, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they said, Chrysler's the reason why I'm able to retire and have a pension and health care. And so, you know, things like that were interesting when people had different opinions, you know, or some of the union guys, you know, some of the union guys were like, the union was the best thing ever and paid, you know, kept me health care, a good job, you know, great friends. Other guys said, oh, the union was the worst thing ever. We had to go to these meetings. There are all these rules and, you know, they made it hard to do this and hard to do that. So it was always interesting to hear people's different experiences, you know, and how even stuff like, you know, a guy would say, oh, I had a Gremlin. It was the best car ever. I put 100,000 miles on it and ran forever and got great gas mileage. Other guys would say, oh, I had a Gremlin. It was such a lemon. Everything went wrong. Blah, blah, blah. And so it was interesting to hear those stories where it kind of challenged your preconceived notions of things, of what you thought you knew about history. And then to talk to a person who actually lived through it is always eye-opening. I think that's one thing we're really proud of, is the number of former AMC employees that we talked to where they got to tell the story instead of us, you know, telling people what to think. We could interview these people who actually lived through it.
My official take, and I was there on early and mid-70s AMCs, was that they were pretty darn reliable, especially with the 258.6 and the torque flight. They just seemed to last forever. And I had a buddy who had a Gremlin. You couldn't kill that thing, and God knows he tried.
Right, yes, that's a good point. I mean, you know, if you got the right engine transmission combo, you know, if you got a well-made car, they would, if you took good care of it, they'd last a long time. I think the challenge was that, you know, sometimes the quality was a little spotty. In one of the episodes, one of the guys, one of the workers we interviewed said, never buy a car that was built on a Friday. You know, he said everybody was skipping out early.
I've heard this.
He said everybody was skipping out early or having a couple beers at lunch and then coming back to work. And so, you know, those kinds of stories were a lot of fun. But yeah, if you got a six-cylinder AMC, those engines would run forever.
There was an addition to that, too, was not to buy a car built on Monday because people were still hungover.
So Tuesday through Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the way to go.
Exactly, yeah.
Joe, we're running out of time, but I want to talk about something really fascinating. What was it like to work with Mitt Romney?
His team was great. Our interview was very short. We went down to Washington, D.C., and his my co-producer, Pat Foster, actually is an acquaintance of Mitt. They're not, you know, best friends or anything, but they know each other because Pat used to know Mitt Romney's father, George Romney. And so Pat was able to get us a meeting with Mitt to interview him, and they gave us about 30 minutes. And, you know, we were in, we set up all our cameras in his office there in D.C. He showed up, was a great interview, was friendly, and I think he was really excited to talk about something other than politics.
I think so. He's a great interview. It's fun to watch him talk about something other than politics. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
His father's legacy is very important to him, and I think it really touched him to have a chance to talk about his dad. I think his dad is a very special inspiration in his life. And so we had a great time, didn't talk about any political stuff. It was all cars. I think he had a few good chuckles remembering stories about, you know, getting to go to work when he was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old with his dad. And, he was a great interview. There's some more stories of him in episode 2. I won't spoil it, but he tells some great stories about going into work and looking at the new car designs before they were, you know, officially released. So that's a good one.
Joe, before we wrap up, walk us through the 6 episodes.
Sure. So the series is chronological. Each episode is half an hour, and they cover the entire history of American Motors from, you know, the 1940s, what led up to the formation of the company, all the way through the 1990s, kind of the aftermath after the Chrysler buyout. And it features over, I think it's over 35 interviews made it into the final cut with different AMC employees, journalists, historians, and features, you know, hours of rare photos and rare footage that we got of the cars and the factory and the workers. So it's something we're really proud of, and I think really covers the real AMC history. And the best compliment I've gotten so far is people that tell me I don't even like cars, and I liked watching them. So that's a pretty high compliment. I think the personalities of the people play a big role in really showing kind of the color of AMC, and it makes it a really fun thing to watch.
No, it's a joy to watch. The first half hour went really quick, and it was 2 in the morning, and I'm like, do I watch another? I really wanted to. It was so good. but congratulations. It's tight. It's informative. It's fun to watch. I love the art. You guys did a great job.
Well, thank you so much. That means so much to hear that from you, Tom. And, of course, just a reminder, folks can watch us on YouTube. Just look up The Last Independent Automaker.
Awesome.
And, you know, it'll be on your local public television stations as well. You can check your local listing.
Joe, congratulations. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. It was a blast. Thank you, Tom and Joe.
All right. That was Joe Ligo, producer and director of The Last Independent Automaker. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. We were talking American Motors.
We were.
That's one of those things I worry about being forgotten. It was such a big part of my life, but I'm not young anymore. And when I talk to people just 15 years younger than me, mm-hmm. they don't remember American Motors, which is crazy. And then it's really big here in Chicago because it employed so many people nearby.
Well, and what I find really interesting is the lingo that was generated or created by American Motors that we still have today that you don't even associate with American Motors anymore. So, like, you mentioned the Torque Flight.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a Chrysler that AMC bought.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm like, that language is still around. And like Willys, we were talking about that offline, or Willys.
Willys.
We don't know the
In the series, they call it Willys. Maybe. And that's very interesting to me.
But that was the precursor to Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. It's just interesting how, and I feel like the engines and things like were American Motors engines and powertrains that for the first several years before they, you know, were completely assimilated into Chrysler.
Yeah. And think transmissions are expensive to build.
Yeah.
And they're expensive to design. So buying a transmission mm-hmm. still happens.
Yeah.
Right. BMW uses ZF transmissions, and so does Stellantis for big trucks and rear drive
right.
cars. So it's interesting that it happens, but they were also buying engines, and they bought the Iron Duke from General Motors, the 2.5 liter 4 that showed up in different AMC vehicles. But anyway, social media?
Blah, blah, blah. Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, Threads, Blue Sky, YouTube, all the things. And you can find me at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag Car du Jour. I typically drop a new video on TikTok every day. I try to do a long form video on YouTube once a week. And you can also find me on the Pickup Truck Talk YouTube channel as well, doing reviews.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I didn't write any of that down. So
yeah,
I just,
no. Well, so I'll just have to repeat it again next week.
Do you know what you can see on social media?
Pictures of cute cats.
And my keychain.
And your keychain. No, I've like literally started a campaign to just look at reels of cute cats.
My daughter started to post pictures of dogs that
yeah.
need to be adopted.
Yeah. Oh, I need to follow her then.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need a dog, but I would like those so that they would get boosted.
So there you have it. All right. Are you done with that social thing?
Yeah. Jill Simonello, Carte du Jour.
All right. Yep. Sounds good. Today's quiz. Are you ready?
I'm never ready, but let's go for it.
Was it an AMC?
Oh, let's see. Let's see. Even though we've just talked about it, I'm not good with the classics.
We didn't talk about any of these cars.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about one briefly by accident because I actually meant Matador.
Okay.
But anyway, I just need you to. I'm going to give you a model.
Okay.
These are all real car models. You need to tell me if they were AMC products or not.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Five questions total plus the bonus question. You need three for a total win.
Okay.
And the bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Always.
All right. Hornet. Was there an AMC Hornet?
I feel like, wasn't there a Hudson Hornet?
There absolutely was.
And so the question is, did the Hudson Hornet go through to AMC?
I never thought of this. But the Hudson Hornet was the car in Cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Voiced by Paul Newman.
Yeah. So I used to go to classic car shows with my dad, because I like the design and not necessarily like all of the things about classic cars, but I like looking at the hood ornaments and stuff like that. And there were a lot of Hudsons at the Lake Mirror Classic in Lakeland, Indiana, or Lakeland, Florida, every year. Okay, so Hornet.
Yep.
AMC Hornet. I'm going to say yes.
Yes. And now there's a Dodge Hornet.
Yeah. I was like, I know Dodge has one, so
So that was a compact car from 1970 to 1977, replaced by the Concorde. And in the late 70s, they replaced everything with a different name, but it was kind of the same car because they had no money.
Got it.
All right. The Spirit. Was there an AMC Spirit?
S-P-I-R-I-T, Spirit. We got Spirit.
That is how they spelled it. You're halfway home.
It's an old cheerleader thing.
Is it?
R-I-T, Spirit. Okay,
I used to like cheerleaders.
I'm going to say no.
There was.
Okay.
The Spirit replaced the Gremlin, which we just talked about.
Right.
In the AMC line. The Spirit ran from 1979 to 1983. You have 1 point.
I have 1 point.
Yep.
But you did not get to say that I have no points.
No. The Rambler Rebel. Was that a thing?
Well, I know there was the Nash Rambler, right?
Well, not Rambler, Rebel. Rebel is the model we're looking for here.
Now you're confusing me.
Rambler was just a brand that got phased out and replaced by AMC over time. We almost got to that topic when we were talking to Joe, but Rambler became their really popular kind of right-size vehicle.
Okay, so...
But Rebel was a model name.
So the AMC Rebel.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Ram Rebel.
Yes, there is now. It's funny how these things keep...
popping back up.
Yep. Just renew those licenses. Gonna need an answer.
I know. I'm listening to the music, man.
That's not what the music is for.
I know. It's to allow me to stall. Yeah.
This would be terrible music to just listen to.
Elevator music. I don't know. Hold music?
What?
Hold music?
It's probably better than most. Okay, I need an answer.
I'll say yes.
Yes. And I believe it was Rambler Rebel before it became American Motors Rebel, but it was around from 67 to 70. Mid-sized car.
Okay.
There was a really cool muscle car based on the car called the Rebel Machine. Packed with a big AMC 390 V8. All right, you have 2 points. You need one more for a win. Comet. Was there an AMC Comet? You need to think out loud. This gets boring otherwise.
Well, so then I was thinking, was there a Hudson Comet? I
don't know. It doesn't sound familiar.
I don't know. So I was like...
There was a Hudson Jet.
Okay.
That came up in the documentary last night.
I'm going to say no.
No, correct. The Comet was a Mercury 1960 to 1977. Skipped a model in there someplace. But it was a clone of the Maverick, back when the Maverick was a compact car.
Instead of a small pickup truck?
Yes.
Yes. So Ford, not Chrysler.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, Mercury.
Mercury. Well, yeah. Mercury Ford.
So you have three. You've won.
All right. Woo!
Finally, Ambassador. Was there an AMC Ambassador?
I'm not... I'm going to say yes.
Yes. And one of the first things that Robert De Niro ever did as an actor was a commercial.
Okay.
For the AMC Ambassador, and it's awesome.
Okay.
It's a great commercial. It's just 30 seconds.
Is it available on YouTube?
I will share this. We got a lot to share.
Yeah.
So I'm going to share a link to the Cordoba commercial.
And your keychain.
And my keychain. I'll share a picture of the keychain. We still have to share a picture of the donuts, which we haven't looked at yet. So we've got a lot to do.
Wait, you brought donuts?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
So you got four?
I did.
All right.
I did.
Bonus question. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Jill, which of the following is not a fast food chain found in Brazil?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Arby's, Jack in the Box, Wendy's, or Chipotle?
I'm going to go with Chipotle.
Is not found in Brazil?
Yeah.
Actually, I did this wrong. I wrote the question wrong. Which of these is found in Brazil?
Is found in Brazil.
Yeah. Arby's, Jack in the Box, Wendy's,
Chipotle.
So
only
Chipotle.
One of them is found.
I wrote it wrong.
Okay, but
yeah,
one is found.
Only one of them is there, yeah.
Okay, read through them again.
Uh-huh. Arby's.
Mm-hmm.
They have potato cakes again.
Ooh, I do like their potato
cakes.
They're
good. Jack in the Box, where I had my first taco ever.
Mm-hmm.
You think that would just turn me off of Mexican food forever. Wendy's or Chipotle.
And one of them is found there.
Yes.
I'm going to say Wendy's.
Yes. Two locations.
Okay.
Two. Dos. All right.
Don't they speak Portuguese?
Yes, they do.
I don't know that dos is the word in Portuguese.
I don't know that I could.
I don't know that it isn't.
I don't know
it.
That I could hear the difference between Portuguese and Spanish.
Okay.
I don't know.
I
Portuguese.
Un poquito de español, but I don't know Portuguese at all. So, but they're very similar.
They look a little different.
They do.
Yeah. I think I could pick it out on paper more easily than if I heard it.
Yeah. Just like French does not look like it sounds.
So I wanted to talk about something here real quick.
On the Volkswagen? Is that it?
Yes. Yeah, so I drove back to back. I drove. I have had a busy week because cars that were canceled got rescheduled for me.
Okay.
Two cars last week.
Okay.
So I drove that Equinox.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very impressed by the Equinox. And I drove the Golf R.
Okay. I want to drive. I had the Golf R briefly at the Mama Rally.
Yeah. It's a flat out joy to drive. It's the GTI's muscle bound.
But no manual transmission. Sure.
No manual, but dang, it's quick. I don't know that I could shift that quick anyway.
No.
Fantastic handling. Mm-hmm. Really nicely screwed together. Great looking with the black package.
Yes.
Everything about it's cool. The infotainment setup is better, but it still has really weird problems.
Okay.
So, and I'm not my phone, right? I'm driving the Chevy, no problems at all. None. My phone's working. It's hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I want to do with my phone is working great and listen to music. It's all good.
Okay.
And the Equinox's bass stereo is okay.
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 I probably wouldn't know the difference. It's probably fine.
But the Golf worked much better than it used to.
Like, okay.
I had really big problems when I drove the ID4, the first ID4, which is their electric car, and nothing worked. And I could never get my Bluetooth connection to stay hooked up. If I did, it would show the wrong music for what was playing, you know, the album cover image and stuff like that. It was a nightmare. This is better, but it ain't fixed. So I tried, my daughter and I have this game we play where we listen to music off of my phone when we're driving around. And she can change it up to twice. So if Gordon Lightfoot or Ray Bryant comes up, it's like change. And then she's stuck with the next thing.
Okay.
You know, and then it usually ends up being like a Mozart symphony. So she's totally screwed.
I'm totally cool with Mozart symphonies. I listen to the Requiem on the regular, by the way.
There you go.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, every time I turned off the car and turned it back on, the music was in a different place. Like a different album, a different thing. And I could not use shuffle. Every time I set it for shuffle, I would just go to my things, pick songs, hit shuffle the way I always do. It would play the first song that would come up randomly and then stop. And the only thing that you could do from the touchscreen is replay that song. It would not advance to the next song.
Well, that's because you're not using Apple CarPlay, my friend.
Except that it worked just fine. In
but if
the
you
other
used
car.
Apple CarPlay, it would be way would it? Easier. Yeah, it would.
Would it?
It would.
Also, there is a native system in the car that Volkswagen provides, so one expects it's going to work.
No, one does not expect that. One expects Apple CarPlay to work.
Why have it at all then?
You shouldn't. You should just have Apple CarPlay.
Okay.
Or Android Auto.
We're skipping the point that Volkswagen makes a product available for people that does not work.
Do you remember Entune?
Vaguely. Was that Lexus?
Toyota.
Yeah.
It sucked. Native systems typically suck.
Not always.
Suck.
Also, you're changing the subject a little bit. Whether or not they're bad or good, they should be good.
Use Apple CarPlay.
That's
kind of the point. Use Apple CarPlay. So, okay, similarly, by the way,
we don't know that CarPlay would work.
Yes, we do. It does. I use it all the time. And the car that I had recently that did not have Apple CarPlay, I am a podcast listener. So you do music. I listen to podcasts when I'm driving or in the cars. And so I had queued up, like, because no Apple CarPlay. So on my phone, I had queued up the podcasts in the order that I wanted to listen to them in. And every time I got into the car, it would just start playing my podcast without me starting to play the podcast because there was no Apple CarPlay. Then you have to page through the screens to figure out how to pause the Apple podcast or the podcast that's playing on my phone through the Bluetooth connection. And when you couldn't find it through the native screen, then you pick up your phone to pause the podcast. I figured, like, my mom didn't want to listen to, you know, my podcast on cars or whatever. So I'm just like, pause. But that was incredibly, insanely difficult.
Have you seen my keychain?
I'm just saying, you should have. I would have liked the comparison because I don't think you have the Volkswagen anymore. I would have liked your comparison using Apple CarPlay versus using the native system.
I don't think it's a funny thing about that. You shouldn't offer something that's not going to work. But what's interesting about that, true for European makers, mm-hmm. is that many of them offer AM radio mm-hmm. in vehicles, and the AM radio sucks. Hmm. Also, we're losing AM radio anyway because European makers don't want to put it in electric vehicles.
Right.
Because you have to shield the engine, you shield the motor and stuff. So it's a thing that's disappearing. I've written about that, actually.
Yeah.
Not a lot of talk about that lately. It was a really big deal, but you can get to most AM radio stations via an app.
Or through FM.
Or just through Google.
Yeah, well, a lot of, like, WBBM in Chicago is the one that I listen to a lot, and they have both, you know, 780 AM and then, yeah.
Interestingly
FM.
About that, Robert Colangelo, host of Green Sense Radio, mm-hmm. They play the Green Sense Minute, mm-hmm. and he always just associates himself with the FM band,
yeah,
not the AM band, which is interesting. Do you know why they do that partially?
Why do they do that?
Because AM radio doesn't really work in downtown Chicago, all the big buildings.
Huh, I've never really had a problem.
Yeah, AM radio generally doesn't work very well downtown.
Interesting. Well, I go downtown.
Yeah. But yeah, that's why there's FM versions. WGN used to have an FM station. I don't know what came of that, but it's not there anymore. Hmm. They used to also play alternative programming during Cubs games on that, but we're a little off topic.
We are. So Apple CarPlay, you should use it.
I guess. I guess. But before we get to that point, there's the point that the system that Volkswagen is producing for public consumption should probably work.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just going to contend that the native systems in most vehicles, I mean, especially going back, they're much better now in 2025. But I remember, like, Entune was notoriously awful. And when they finally replaced that with their new, you know, Toyota interface or Lexus interface, so much better.
Interestingly, I'm driving the Volkswagen Taos this week.
Okay. Apple CarPlay.
We'll see. But the native, that's a newer, right? That's just redesigned.
Yeah.
So that might be the newest version of this infotainment system.
Okay, I have a homework assignment for you.
Oh.
So next week, I want to have a conversation with you about using the native Volkswagen system versus using Apple CarPlay listening to your music.
Oh, don't take my curmudgeon from me.
I'm taking your curmudgeon from you. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Also, and this has nothing to do with anything, I don't really like the CarPlay graphics.
So?
Yeah.
I don't like the graphics in most cars.
All right, I will do it. All right?
Thank you.
Whatever.
I appreciate you.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Also in my driveway, because my schedule got messed up, mm-hmm. The new Navigator.
Yeah.
Dang. I only drove it a couple miles so far, but this is obviously Lincoln's gigantic Ford mm-hmm. Expedition, their take on the Expedition. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Everything about this is sweet. Interesting, too. We talked a little bit about how Ram is having a hard time selling things with V6s mm-hmm. or inline sixes, but the Navigator is a V6, mm-hmm. and who cares? Because hokey schmokels. Is that 450 horsepower?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Not real worried about power.
No.
Yeah. Also, at this point, I'm not really worried about that engine lasting.
Okay.
So, all right. I think that's the stuff. You got anything going on?
Review, as we talked about earlier, of the Honda CR-V Trail Sport posted to Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. The video is coming to the YouTube, the Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk YouTube channel. And then I've got some TikToks that are coming out this week on that as well. And I would say those that's the big thing that I got going on this week.
We have a lot to link to. The Cordoba keychain picture, which I haven't taken yet. The donuts, which we haven't even looked at
yet. No, there's donuts.
Next Saturday night at midnight Chicago time, I join Steve and Johnny. You lost interest in my conversation?
Yeah, I just looked at the donuts.
They're Krellers.
I'm kind of disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
They're Krellers.
Yeah.
Krellers are now extra cost. You should be happy. Mm. All right. Guess what we did?
We talked about donuts.
We did. Big thanks to Joe Ligo of The Last Independent Automaker. The documentary is excellent. People should watch it. Thank you, Jill. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.